Are you ready to sell more books? I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm Claire Taylor. If you're ready to get your books into the hands of the right readers
and make some more money,
you've come to the right podcast.
And now it's time to talk tips, tricks, and news to help you sell more of your books. Welcome, 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 everybody, to another episode of the Sell More Book Show, episode 492. I'm Brian Cohen from Best Page Forward, joined by Claire Taylor from FFS Media. Claire, 492 times someone has talked about self-publishing news. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, Brian. I have never felt more alive. And I think that is demonstrated for those viewers of this video by how much I am struggling keeping my eyes open today.
You can't hear tired on the voice, so it's going to be okay.
Oh, good. Great. How are you, Brian?
I'm pretty good. You know, we're into September, into the school year. I'm going to be speaking at the Pacific Northwest Writers Conference in a couple weeks in Seattle. We are going as a family, and we're going to try to stay on Eastern time, which is going to be amazing.
Oh, best of luck.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I see me and Riley going to the gym at like 4 a.m. Pacific time together. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. That's I imagine that's going to work out completely. So, yeah.
I think you are as right as you believe. And yeah, what do you got coming up? What's new in FFS Media coming up?
Oh man, we have got the Liberated Writer. Oh man.
Yep. Yep.
I'm so jealous of the auditory experience our listeners are having today.
Me too.
I have the Liberated Writer course coming up, enrolling now for October 16th through November 16th. That's a 5-week course, and there'll be 2 live calls with me per week. And we will be going through a lot of material and videos and all that kind of thing to turn you into a liberated writer.
Whoop, whoop.
Basically just, you know, alignment.
Yeah. Happy, healthy, and more in the direction of your actual strengths and goals.
Yes. Brainwashed and blind obedience to me.
That's how we got to this point.
What do you have coming up, Brian?
I've got a webinar called Build a Better Book Launch. It was our most requested class in a survey that we did earlier this year. So we're doing it because we love you guys. That is really what it's all about. And the link will be in the show notes. It is on Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern, the Thursday, September 14th at 2 p.m. Eastern.
Is that your campaign slogan, Build Book Better?
Build Book Better, Launch Better. Yeah, absolutely. It's the triple Bs. Build a Better Book Launch. BBBL.
Brian, 2024.
Yeah.
Build Book Better.
Build Book Better. Build a Bear. So
you can build whatever you want, really.
I know,
books,
really.
Bears, Battlestar Galactica.
Whatever bees we can find. But don't trust the bee in apartment 23. Question of the week, a previous week, was describe the weirdness that your book features that can't be found anywhere else, and how do you pronounce niche or niche? Angela Moss said, I write middle grade mysteries that are thinly veiled history books. In each case, the protagonist has to learn about the history and culture of the city to solve the mystery. I love some good edutainment there, Angela, so that sounds fun to me.
Logan Russell said, the weirdest has to be my book's villain who lives on a moon with very low gravity and enjoys tumbling around like a gymnast while delivering evil monologues. It's niche for me.
And Heather Hadley said, team niche here. I think most of Canada is. My weirdness is the emotional roller coaster I create for the reader, particularly making them like or at least feel sympathy for characters they shouldn't like. That's fun when you've got some dimension to those villains and antiheroes. That makes it a lot of fun. You can answer the question of the week over at sellmorebookshow.com or in the Sell More Book Show After Party Facebook group. Claire, I know you love this topic for our top story, so should we just get into it?
I can't wait. More, please.
Yes. Thank you. May I have another? AI survey says is our top story. Amazon is asking some awkward questions of authors these days. They recently added a question to the KDP dashboard requesting authors to tell whether their book is AI generated before they click the publish button. Authors will see the following five options, reports Good eReader. One, none of the text slash images slash translations are generated by artificial intelligence. Two, some sections with minimal or no editing were generated by AI. Three, AI generated some areas with extensive editing. Four, the entire work with minimal or no editing was developed by AI. And five, the whole piece with extensive editing was generated by AI. Some are celebrating this as a sign that Amazon is finally doing something about the influx of low-quality AI content, but Amazon hasn't said that's the purpose. In their press release, Amazon writes, quote, "We are actively monitoring the rapid evolution of generative AI and the impact it is having on reading, writing, and publishing, and we remain committed to providing the best possible shopping, reading, and publishing experience for our authors and customers. To that end, when you publish a new title or make edits to and republish an existing title through KDP, you will be asked whether your content is AI-generated," end quote. AI-generated content is defined, but not prohibited. I don't know what that means. Books, as before, must simply adhere to the KDP content guidelines. The Authors Guild sees this as a welcome first step. Quote, "Amazon will use this information to help shape policies around AI-generated content," writes the Guild, "but has not yet agreed to add disclosures to all book listings for AI-generated books on its other channels outside of KDP, as the Authors Guild requested." Claire, we love AI discussions on this show. This question coming up, I remember the moment I heard that it popped up, I just had to laugh. I mean, the fact that they're just now asking this awkward question, it's like, you know, going up to people it randomly in public and asking what their religion is or something. It's just like, it's I get it, but it's also so awkward. And we're just trying to avoid the awkward conversations around the self-publishing dinner table these days. What was your reaction to hearing about this question?
I think this, so you're reading this, AI-generated content is defined but not prohibited. I think that's really what's happening here, is that it's being defined, right? Mm. Amazon is trying to create categories for almost this gradient of use of AI. So it's not doing all or nothing, which is, I think, is a step in the right direction, because as we know, there are gradients of use.
Yes.
And different applications. So in that way, it's like, good. It's not just a yes or no, because that's always sketchy anyway. But it's not prohibiting it. And I think that's important for now. I mean, what I take away from this is Amazon is like, we should probably get some data.
Yeah.
We should. And that's kind of all that we know that it's doing, is just getting data, because they're like, we have a problem. We need to collect data, because we don't just want to make moves without actually knowing what's going on here.
Right.
So this is like almost like running blood tests. It doesn't necessarily give us information. We're never going to see the results.
No, we will not. We will never see the results of this survey.
No. So for us, it's like, some, you know, there's going to be that sort of inherent mistrust of someone being like, let's run a blood test and I'll let you know if I think it's important. I'll start spiking your food with whatever medication I think you need. You know, it's kind of that feeling to it, but
yeah, that brave new world feeling.
A little bit of, yeah, yeah. They're going to pass out the soma for us.
Exactly, exactly.
But I don't think it's that. I don't think it's any, I think they're just trying to get data, because like, why wouldn't they?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know, this has sort of already been answered in a way, going into the hot potatoes of wisdom. Because the question here was, why do you think Amazon is asking these questions, which you've kind of answered. But what do you think, Claire, is like some of the data they want to gather? Mm-hmm. Like, what are they trying to figure out?
I think Amazon is gathering this data on AI and people's use of it and the degree to which they're using it, because Amazon needs to find out if it's profitable or not to continue to allow the use of AI. Mm. If it is, you know, the assumption may be, oh, well, if everyone's pouring these AI books on here and it's this, you know, they're pouring this junk on here, it's going to hurt Amazon sales. I think that that's a good theory, but you can't figure that out without the data. So here's the bottom line. If AI being published to Amazon does not hurt Amazon's bottom line, it's not going to regulate it. It's not going to crack down on it.
Yeah.
If it is hurting, if Amazon looks at all these different things and they say, oh, you know, from the data we're getting from this, the books that have less AI generated content are better sellers, maybe we should boost those so that we can get more sales, then they'll do that. If that makes them more money, if they can sell more products. So I think we have to remember there's kind of this excitement about like, Amazon's finally doing something about this. And then there's, you know, from the people who are kind of against the AI, sort of like the more extreme against AI is like, Amazon's finally going to crack down. And then there's people who are using AI in ways that they find ethical who are like, Amazon's going to kick me off because they're, you know, gathering all this data. And so I'm leaving kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I don't think that either one of those is looking at this the right way, because Amazon does not care about where this falls morally. They care about where this falls commercially. How does AI increase or decrease their profits? And that includes, you know, if people are using Amazon less to find books because it's getting cluttered. Yeah, there's all kinds of data that they need to make these decisions on profit. And so I don't think we know yet where this is going to fall, because we don't have that data.
Yeah, Amazon is going to make a decision in their best interest. Mm-hmm. And if that happens to align with authors' best interests, yay. But it's going to align with some number that they're seeing that we are never going to see.
So true. Okay, Brian, should readers know if AI was used in the creation of a book?
So should readers know, should there be a mark on a book or on the website that says AI was used in a book? Obviously, there's a good portion of the author community that thinks that AI is unethical, that thinks, yes, there should be the AI mark of shame upon this book. And folks who are using AI ethically, in their estimation, think that there shouldn't be any distinguishing factor from this book and other books. And so it really, a lot of it depends on what side of the aisle do you find yourself on? Do you think someone has crossed the line one way or the other? And I think that if someone has generated an entire book from AI and they barely changed it, I think that it might make sense if there was something there. I've seen some people use the co-author ChatGPT for books, and I don't know how, you know, what the thought process is there on if you need to do that or not. But that I thought was very interesting. And I wonder if AI fully generated AI books or mostly generated AI books that haven't been edited, it would make sense to have something listed. But then how do you decide? How do you decide what is AI generated enough to count? And no one is ever going to set that mark, I think, because it would be impossible to tell, oh, this book is technically 75%. Like, how are you going to sort that out? It's just not going to happen. And so because of that, I would say, no, readers shouldn't know, because I don't know who's going to judge, who watches The Watchmen. I have no idea.
Yes, I would agree with that. And I mean, if you read just a little bit of Hawthorne, you know, that sometimes that scarlet letter is not the best approach.
Yeah, this is true. So we're going to go into the lightning round, move on from this thing. I know.
Blast it to pieces.
Yeah, blast the top story into oblivion. So, Claire, it takes work to sell direct and to pivot away from selling on other people's stores. How do you think you know when you're ready?
This is such a tricky question. How do you know when you're ready to start selling direct? It's a tricky question because it's so individualized.
Mm.
You are going to want to have the bandwidth because it's a huge learning curve. You're going to want to have the just resources in general. You know, if this is money, if this is time, if this is maybe an assistant that can help you with some of the technical setup. And you're going to want to have an audience, you know, that can help to move people there. But, you know, you can also do some cold advertising or advertising on cold audiences and that sort of thing. But basically, I would say you want to look at what resources you have, what being time, money, and help. You know, and that help can be an assistant. It can be a course, right? It can be a coach, something like that. Because this isn't as easy as just put a button on your website. There's a lot more complication there. But I think that you can set it up and start testing it and learning whenever you want.
Makes total sense. Thank you for answering the tricky question.
That's not even the trickiest topic today. Brian, how would you entice readers to buy from you versus buying from their regular store?
So there's a few ways to entice readers to buy from you direct versus from Amazon or another store. A lot of people will use free books followed up by something you can buy on the confirmation page. This has been called a tripwire. This is called a bunch of different things. You can give coupons. That's something you can't really do on Amazon. You can give coupons to readers, and some people will have their site set up so that a coupon box pops up, just like many sites you've seen. And you can actually put in your email address to get this coupon, and then that is a way you can entice people to buy later on just from you. And the third way is by having a unique combination of your items or a box set or some mix of different types of items that maybe is a book plus other things or a special kind of book that's not available on the stores, so people feel like they're getting something unique. So it's either freebies with an upsell, you've got coupons, and you have the unique product angle. Those are some of the big ways that people are having success with direct.
That's great.
Yeah. Bum-ba-da-bum-bum-bum. So, Claire, what terrible advice do you see repeated in the author community? And we'll just limit it to one or two terrible pieces of advice.
I have seen so much bad advice in the author community. And I think most of it is well-intentioned.
Sure.
But the worst advice that I see is, generally speaking, advice that says there's one way to do something. This is a system that is guaranteed to get you to where you, it's like one person had success with it. It's not necessarily replicable. Any advice that makes you have to really change who you are at a fundamental level is not going to be good advice. If you have to, one piece that was going around for a while, and I think now we have a little bit more sense about it, was, you have to give up your personal life to be successful at this. Mm. If you really want this, you'll give up things outside of writing. You have to, you know, live and breathe publishing and blah, blah, blah. Ew, frankly. That, surprise, surprise, that didn't work for people. And we have a burnout epidemic right now. And also, it's like, since when has that ever been the lifestyle of a writer? Like, right. You know what you need to do? Never refill your well. Like, knock it off. Anyway, I think that's probably the worst piece of advice. But there's a lot of advice out there that if you hear it and something about it just feels off, that is a good indicator that it's not the advice for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Very helpful, non-terrible advice, Claire.
Oh, thank you, Brian. So what terrible advice have you followed in the past?
Oh, I've followed so much terrible advice in the past, Claire. I have tried to do, coming back to what you said, I've tried to do all sorts of things that just didn't fit who I was. I've tried technologies that I went really deep down rabbit holes on, whether it be through certain types of advertising or certain types of selling. And I tried these guises on, and they were not me. And what I've learned after, you know, I first published in 2010. So what I've learned 13 years later is that if you feel initially like something is not a good fit for you, there's a reason you're feeling it, and you should listen to it. And so the most terrible advice I've followed is to not listen to it. And that is the thing that has caused the most issues. Listening to my heart has helped me a lot more.
I love that. I thought you were going to say the worst advice you'd ever gotten was when someone told you to start a podcast.
That's great. I love that. I love that. 9 years later.
That person's dead now.
I know. They're dead. Killed by me. So, Claire, let's say you were a new author and you were gifted $500 to use on your first book. How would you spend it?
I would spend it probably on a nice dinner.
Ooh.
No. If I was gifted $500 for my first book, I would probably spend that on editing.
Mm-hmm.
Editing. Although that's probably $500 is probably not going to be enough for the editing you need for your first book. Just a little pro tip there. If someone's charging you $500 for editing an entire book, it's probably more of a proofread. And for your first book, you're probably going to want more of like a structural content edit, maybe developmental edit.
Yeah.
Other than that, I would probably do like, okay, we're going to do a cover that's good. And then if I have anything left over of the $500, that's going to go to boost an existing editing budget.
Right. Right. I like it. Good answer, Claire. So, to follow any good answer, we need a good question. Do we want to just skip the AI thing entirely? I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think there's been enough discussion about that in the community lately. I think
what if we take the what terrible advice do you see repeated in the author community? Or is that too much of a pressure cooker too? Ooh, what about what is great advice that you see repeated in the author community?
The best advice.
The best advice you see repeated.
Okay, that is good. That will not immediately make us enemies.
Yay! I don't want enemies. More enemies. So
I like to earn my enemies.
Yeah. You can answer that question at selmorebookshow.com or in the comment section for the post in the Sell More Book Show After Party Facebook group. Liberated Writer opens October 16th. So you got to buy it before then, probably, huh?
Yeah, you should register before then.
Yeah,
at liberatedwriter.com.
Nice. And you can go to my Better Book Launch with Brian Bowen at the site. The link will be over in the show boats. So, Claire, any last words you want to leave our listeners with?
Nope. That's it. That's all, it. Folks.
Go home. Well, we've appreciated doing the show for you today. For Claire, I'm Brian. Have a great week of bookselling, everybody. And we will be back next time for episode 493. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to the Sell More Book Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy bookselling!